Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, June 15th, 2024. Projects aim to keep wildlife off runways. Coyotes and javelinas and badgers, oh my. These are a few of the critters who make their way past the fencing at Midland International Air and Spaceport and cause disruptions to the flow of takeoffs and landings. Quote, wildlife around the airport is not a great thing, end quote, said Justine Ruff, Director of Airports for the City of Midland. On Tuesday, City Council members approved two contracts totaling $12.67 million that will help mitigate wildlife issues and keep airline traffic moving. The first is a nearly $3 million project to finish adding concrete to a drainage ditch near Business 20. This not only will help water move faster when it rains, but prevent vegetation from growing, which attracts animals. The larger project, at about $9.68 million, will replace 12 miles of security fencing. Ruff said the current fencing is 6 feet high with razor wire on top. Quote, that's not enough to stop coyotes from crawling over, end quote, she said, adding that airport staff had to chase two coyotes from runways Wednesday. Replacement fencing will be 8 feet high with razor wire, the airport industry standard. While the added fence height is expected to reduce the number of coyotes going over top, further reinforcement is being built to stop javelinas from digging underneath. To stop them, a 24-inch deep concrete barrier will be added. Ruff said they contend with a lot of animals at Midland International: coyotes, javelinas, rabbits, birds, migrating Swanson's hawks, and even badgers. Quote, and rattlesnakes love to rest on the warm tarmac at night, end quote, she said. The issues are a bit different at Midland Air Park. Ruff said that on top of combating prairie dogs, they recently had a large feral hog who decided to make the airport its home. It has since been removed. Ruff said the fencing project at Midland International will take about 18 months to complete, but the work will have no bearing on passengers traveling through the airport. Harmony teachers eligible for up to $32,000 in bonuses. Harmony Public School teachers will be eligible for up to $32,000 in additional compensations in the 2024-25 school year, thanks to the Texas Education Agency, who designated all seven Harmony Regional School Districts as Teacher Incentive Allotment, TIA, designees. Harmony Public Schools is a Texas-wide public charter school system with more than 60 campuses serving students grades pre-K to 12 across 25 cities in the state. Harmony's curriculum places an emphasis on science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, courses. Harmony has issued TIA for a couple of years, which was created during the 86th Texas Legislature in 2019 to retain and reward teachers and districts. In the 2023-24 school year, 25,000 educators received the TIA award across the state. More than 1,000 Harmony teachers received a TIA bonus, with more than 100 teachers receiving $15,000 or more, and more than 30 teachers receiving $20,000 or more. Additionally, Harmony Public Schools announced a new sign-on bonus of $10,000 for teachers who were previously designated TIA recipients at a different district and are now joining Harmony. The Harmony Science Academy in Midland will open in August at 2501 East Loop 250. Harmony teachers at the elementary school will not be eligible for TIA until the 2025-26 school year because school systems who participate in TIA determine teacher designations through data such as classroom observations, student growth outcomes, and performance evaluations. Harmony Science Academy will operate in portable buildings for the next school year while the construction continues their permanent building. Construction is anticipated to be completed for fall 2025. For its first year, the campus will offer grades pre-K to second. The enrollment target for the first year was 250 students, and they have approved 261 registrations so far. Harmony anticipates opening a secondary school serving middle and high school students next to the elementary school in Midland in 2027. Harmony Science Academy has received local support and donations from the Permian Strategic Partnership, Abel Hanger Foundation, and Scarber Foundation. The school in Midland is being built on land donated by the Pioneer Natural Resources. Quote, Harmony has received so much support from the Midland community as a whole, end quote, said John Boyd, Chief Communication and Marketing Officer. Quote, we are very excited to be in Midland, end quote. What's that going to be at the corner of Big Spring Street and Pavilion Parkway? A major business is adding another location in Midland, this time north of Loop 250. According to Chris Beckett of Pine and Beckett Realtors, a new AutoZone store will be built at the corner of North Big Spring Street and Pavilion Parkway in the lot just north of Wendy's. AutoZone is a large retailer of aftermarket auto parts and accessories. There are currently four AutoZone locations in Midland. The newest store will be the third in North Midland. The Reporter-Telegram could not confirm when construction is slated to begin. MC Mental Health Program prepares professionals. The final deadline to apply for Midland College's Mental Health Technician Program is July 22nd. The Mental Health Technician Program is a two-semester program designed to prepare students and learners to work in the mental health field in both inpatient and outpatient settings in the Permian Basin. Through scholarships, the program is fully funded for the 2024-2025 academic year for the first 20 accepted applicants, the Midland College said. Quote, this certificate program is a really important and innovative initiative that is a part of Midland College's larger workforce development that we are creating for the Behavioral Health Center, end quote, said Dr. Stephanie Cables, Director of the Behavioral Health. Those who earn the Mental Health Technician Certificate will have the opportunity to be placed at the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center, where they will serve as the eyes and ears of the inpatient facility, transporting patients, assisting with psychotherapy encounters, engaging in crisis de-escalation, and having regular interactions with the patients, according to Midland College. The Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center is a 225,000-square-foot, 200-bed behavioral health facility, slated to come to the corner of State Highway 191 and Farm to Market Road 1788. Construction at the health center is underway and is expected to be complete by 2026. With the addition of mental health facilities in the area, the need for local mental health professionals will become more apparent, Midland College said. Those who are interested in the program should apply to Midland College, complete the Health Sciences General Application, and submit transcripts to the registrar. To be considered for admission, applicants must meet the following requirements. Must be 18 years of age by September 1st, have a high school diploma or GED, have a negative result on a 10-panel drug screen, maintain current health insurance coverage throughout the program, have required Title 25, Texas Administrative Code Section 97.64, and clinical affiliate immunizations. Feeling stressed? Smash it out. Is your office computer wreaking havoc on your life again? Have you ever woken up and wanted to throw the alarm clock across the room? Do you feel like tossing a plate at dinner time? Liberty City Rage Room has the solution. The Rage Room officially opened in August 2020. However, co-owner Jason Morrison said that in September 2022, the business relocated to an office building in downtown Midland, located at 401 West Texas Avenue. As far as the average cost of spending quality time smashing an old television set into 1,000 pieces, Morrison said that it depends on the number of guests and what kind of room the business can set up for them. Quote, we have different themed rooms. Some of our most popular rooms are the dining room destruction, the bedroom beatdown, and the office annihilation, end quote, he said. To give an idea of what some of the rooms consist of, Morrison said the bedroom beatdown typically has one mirror or large framed picture, three electronics such as a television, DVD, or VCR players, monitor, stereo, phone, lamp, Two large breakable items, such as a large vase, statue, flower pot, coffee pot, large wine bottle, large plates and bowls. Two medium breakable items, such as a vase, clock, or wine bottle, and 25 small items. As far as the types of guests that frequent the Rage Room, Morrison explained that the rooms are booked for a large frequency of events like date night, corporate team building, and even birthday parties. Quote, there's a capacity of 5 people per room, end quote, he said, adding that safety requirements are listed on Liberty City's website. Quote, most of our customers have come in to try something different. People initially come in for the stress relief and because it sounds like fun, end quote. Morrison added that occasionally he sees customers that come in as a way to simply release a bad day. Quote, it is rare, and I would say it's no more than 5% of our customers, end quote, he said. Quote, this is a place where people can just come in and have a good time. It is liberating to them because what we do here is something you can't do outside, end quote. As far as tips, Morrison said to review the safety guidelines on their website. Quote, we do provide hard hats, coveralls, and face shields for our customers, end quote, he said. Quote, guests should expect to wear closed-toed shoes, end quote. For those who may be hesitant to release their rage by swinging a sledgehammer at a computer monitor, Morrison said he frequently sees this kind of apprehension at first. Quote, it's like something suddenly switches and they are ready for more, end quote, he commented. Liberty City Rage Room is open from 1 to 10 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Their last appointment begins at 9:30 p.m. Walk-ins are welcome, but scheduled appointments are preferred. Rig count falls as drilling activity remains slow. Drilling activity fell for a second consecutive week, continuing to hover at 2-year lows. Oilfield service firm Baker Hughes said the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since 1944 fell 4 rigs during the week to 590, the lowest level since January 2022. The count is 97 rigs, or 14% below the 687 rigs reported by Baker Hughes a year ago. The number of rigs seeking crude oil also fell 4 rigs to 488 for the week, and also the lowest level since January 2022. That is 64 rigs below the 552 rigs drilling for oil last June. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas remained unchanged at 98 rigs, 32 rigs below the 130 counted last year, and the lowest levels since October 2021. Texas lost 2 rigs to 285 rigs at work throughout the state, the lowest level since January 2022. New Mexico added a rig for 108 and was the only major producing state to see an increase. Louisiana 2 and Oklahoma 1 joined Texas as producing states to see a decline. The Permian Basin dropped 1 rig for 309 rigs active across the region, 33 below the 342 reported last year. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian, reporting 53 rigs for a third consecutive week. Lee County, New Mexico was close behind with 51 rigs, up 1 for the week. Martin County was unchanged at 32 rigs for the week. Reeves County saw 23 rigs at work within county lines for a fourth consecutive week, followed closely by Loving County, with 22 rigs, down 1 for the week. Midland County was unchanged at 20 rigs for a third week. Reagan County reported 17 rigs, down 1 for the week. Upton County added 1 rig for 15, and Ward County had 10 rigs for a 7th consecutive week. Energy Dedicated Software, as a service firm in Varis, said its U.S. rig count fell 2 rigs to 625 for the week ended June 7th, and is 122 rigs, or 16% below the 747 seen a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil fell 4 rigs to 189 and is 257 rigs, or 58% below the 446 rigs drilling for oil a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas jumped 7 rigs to 104, but is 84 rigs, or 45% below the 188 rigs drilling for natural gas last June. ConocoPhillips remains the most active driller with 31 rigs, followed by EOG Resources with 29 rigs, up 1 for the week, and Occidental Petroleum with 26 rigs, unchanged for the week. Enverus Permian rig count for the week ended June 7th, dropped 1 to 311 rigs and is 52 rigs, or 14% below the 363 rigs drilling in the region the previous June. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, dipped one rig to 167 for the week and is 29 rigs or 15% below the 196 at work a year ago. The Midland Basin added two rigs for 123, but is 18 rigs or 13% below the 141 rigs reported last June. In terms of trailing 30-day permits, Invera said the Permian had 819 for the week ended May 24th, up from 798 the previous week and from 672 a year earlier. The Permian had 96 active frac crews for the week ended May 24th, down from 106 the previous week and from 158 a year earlier. Crude prices post biggest weekly gains since April. Pessimistic consumer sentiment undercut crude prices as the trading week came to an end, but West Texas Intermediate managed a 4% gain for the week. That's the biggest weekly increase in percentage terms since April. WTI rose 4 or 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, opening the trading week with a $2.21 jump, followed by incremental increases Tuesday through Thursday. Prices fell 17 cents Friday on the survey showing deteriorating consumer sentiment, closing at $78.45, up from $75.53 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $74.93, according to Plains All American. Quote, a recent International Energy Agency, IEA, report forecasts that worldwide crude oil demand will peak in 2030, and that will be an 8 million barrel oversupply of crude at that time, end quote. James Meyer, founder and chief executive officer of Green Century Exploration and Production, commented to the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, I believe this report probably overestimates the market share to be gained by green energy and also doesn't fully consider the supply elasticity of oil. As prices fall in periods of abundant supply, drilling typically slows, resulting in supply reduction. My suspicion is that the IEA forecast is a veiled attempt to scare the majors into a premature transition to green energy, end quote, he concluded. Natural gas futures ended the week with a loss despite jumping 22.3 cents Tuesday to cross the $3 per MCF threshold. Henry Hub futures on the NYMEX were unable to hold that surge, dropping 17 cents Wednesday and Thursday and another 7 cents Friday to close the week at $2.886 per MCF, down from $2.918 at last Friday's close. Vehicle crashes into Midland home, homeowner injured. The Midland Police Department reported late Friday that a vehicle crashed into a residence. According to a statement from the city, the accident took place at 2:38 p.m. Friday in the 2700 block of North Big Spring Street. City officials confirmed that the driver of the vehicle was not injured, but the homeowner was transported to hospital with minor injuries. The investigation is ongoing. Maverick players relocate to Allison Fine Arts Building. The Maverick Players, an all-volunteer community theater that specializes in comedies, is moving to a new home. Over its 25-year history, the group has performed their 85 or so productions at Midland Park Mall, the Yucca Theater, Midland Center, and Midland Community Theater, with their last stop being at the VFW Post 4149 for the past 8 years. The Maverick Players' newest home will be on the campus of Midland College at the Allison Fine Arts Building. Quote, it sort of fell into our lap from Midland College from a friend of mine who works there. Said, why don't you ask to perform at Midland College? And we did, and they said yes, and we're very excited about that. It's a much larger facility, end quote. Mary Lou Cassidy, president of the Maverick Players, recalled. The Allison Fine Arts Building is a 200-seat auditorium. With the relocation, there are a couple housekeeping changes for the troupe. One is open seating. Attendees at the Allison Fine Arts Building can purchase a ticket and sit wherever they choose. No reservations are necessary. At the Allison Fine Arts Building, tickets for every performance except opening night are $15. Opening night performances, which cost $20, will include a reception and refreshments, such as wine. The VFW had a license to serve alcohol, not the Maverick Players. Some shows and receptions at Allison Fine Arts will serve wine with permission from the college. The Maverick players will use golf carts to assist those with mobility restrictions in getting from the parking lot to the front door and back after the show. On June 21st, the Mavericks will open Wedding Secrets 2, Samantha's Turn, as their first show at MC. They've held rehearsals at their new home. Cassidy cited the large space for dressing rooms and other amenities that the new venue provides. The move benefits both the Maverick players and Midland College. The troupe gets a large auditorium to perform. Midland College collects a fee for using the space, which will go toward the Midland College Fine Arts Endowment. Quote, "We think that's going to be great for all concerned," end quote, she said. Quote, "Wedding Secrets 2, Samantha's Turn," end quote, is a sequel to a popular Maverick production from two seasons ago, Wedding Secrets. It's a comedy that centers on the relationship between the family of a bride and the family of a groom set at their destination wedding venue. Quote, "It's a little crazy," end quote, Cassidy said. Quote, "There are a lot of strange characters, strange meaning odd, very funny characters from the last show and from the new show. It's wedding conflicts and wedding chaos," end quote. Joe Starczyk, the playwright of the show, will visit Midland for the last weekend of performances, according to the Maverick players. Andy Salcido is the director. Opening night is Friday, June 21st, which will include a reception with wine and cheese, followed by shows Saturday, Sunday, matinee, and Monday, with two additional performances on Friday, June 28th, and Saturday, June 29th. Curtains open for all evening performances at 7:30 p.m. and at 2 p.m. for the matinee. The Maverick players plan for another production in October. Oil report. Matador acquires Ameredev in $1.9 billion deal. After several years of holding on to their portfolios amid low oil prices, private equity firms have resumed cashing out their holdings. The latest is EnCap Investments, which is selling its Ameredev portfolio company to Matador Resources for $1.9 billion. The deal involves a subsidiary of Ameredev II, parent, and includes certain oil and natural gas producing properties, an undeveloped acreage located in Lee County, New Mexico, and Loving and Winkler Counties, Texas. The deal also includes an approximate 19% stake in Pinyon Midstream LLC, which has midstream assets in southern Lee County. Quote, "The next big private equity exit has hit the Permian Basin with EnCap's Ameredev II selling to Matador for $1.9 billion. The deal is the second major acquisition Matador has made from EnCap following its purchase of Advance Energy in 2023, end quote, commented Andrew Dittmar, principal analyst at Enverus Intelligence Research, to the Reporter Telegram by email. The deal continues a second land grab in the Permian Basin following an initial buying frenzy in 2016 to 2019 as public companies race against one another to secure remaining inventory. That has proven a goldmine for private equity firms. That had built sizable positions in the Delaware and Midland basins, including EnCap. These private firms have seen the value of their assets soar as a dwindling set of opportunities to acquire deals drives prices higher," Dittmar wrote. Quote, "The sale of Ameredev looks like another winning deal for EnCap, as the company monetizes the position at a good price, including getting around $20,000 per acre for the undeveloped upside. While the acreage contains some very high-quality inventory, its position on the eastern edge of the Delaware Basin may impact multi-zone development relative to assets located to the west," end quote, he wrote. For Matador, the company continues to build scale as one of the two principal public companies with the lion's share of their operations in the Delaware Basin, along with Permian Resources, he continued. Quote, "With shale maturing and few opportunities to organically add resource, mergers and acquisitions have become the primary conduit for resource expansion. Companies that are not in the market as buyers are likely to become targets themselves as scale becomes increasingly important. Matador appears set on maintaining its status as an independent company and has sought private opportunities to bolster its position that will be a close operational fit with their existing footprint. Building a position of scale is key for achieving operational synergies, including longer lateral development and optimizing midstream infrastructure. Matador should be able to optimize development of the position and coordinate with its existing midstream footprint, including handling any issues from sour gas issues on the asset, end quote, he wrote. Following closing of the acquisition, Matador expects to have over 190,000 net acres in the Delaware Basin, approximately 2,000 net locations, production of over 180,000 barrels of oil and natural gas equivalent, BOE, per day, proved oil and natural gas reserves of over 580 million BOE, and an enterprise value in excess of $10 billion. Aris Energy Partners finds success in Barnett Project. Oil and natural gas operators continue finding new resources in the Permian Basin as they branch out from the Wolf Camp and San Andres plays. One such effort, the, quote, Pradero Fuego Project, end quote, in Ector County, is yielding strong results from the Barnett Shale in the Mississippian Interval. Quote, it's been exciting, end quote, Bob Dimmitt, president of Aris Energy, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Dimmitt said six wells have been placed in production and the drilling rig has just been released from the seventh well, with completion operations set to begin in July. Quote, these are big wells, with initial potentials north of 1,000 barrels per day. Ultimately, they'll produce 1.2 million barrels plus natural gas, end quote, he said. The wells are located on 17,000 contiguous acres in West Odessa. Not only are they prolific producers, able to flow for quite some time, but the oil cut is in the 80% range, he added. They are a little more expensive, $2.5 million per well for two-mile laterals, but the low water cut reduces water handling costs, Dimmitt said. Plus, the natural gas is extremely rich at about 1,400 BTU. Quote, we're sandwiched between Occidental, Continental Resources, Diamondback. Elevation Resources is doing the same thing in Andrews County. Even ConocoPhillips has done a well. XTO has done a well. We're the little guys playing in big boy country, end quote, Dimmitt said. Dimmitt also noted that the project is being undertaken with private funding, all from the Midland area. Quote, not private equity backing, not institutional backing, all private funding, end quote, he said. Royal Energy and its investors have a 5% working interest through a joint development agreement with Aris. Quote, we believe this play is the next big thing for the Permian Basin. Now the play is catching fire on a lot of players are recognizing the opportunities and looking to exploit them, end quote, he said. Next, Dimmitt said, quote, we are looking and contemplating marketing of the project early in the fourth quarter, end quote, through a Houston company that will help sell it to a larger, stronger financial player. Then, he said, Aris will look at continuing its Barnett development strategy. Quote, we've cored the Woodford and are very encouraged by it, end quote, he said. Quote, our project was originally intended to be a one-bench play, but now it will be a two-bench play, end quote. Bruno Hansen melded love of outdoors, science, into geology career. Credited as being the first to bring an environmental focus to the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. There were a number of firsts in Bernald M., quote, Bruno, end quote, Hansen's life. He was a first-generation American, born to a Norwegian immigrant father and daughter of Norwegian immigrants in North Dakota. He was the first to bring an environmental focus to the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, where he served as president from 1986 and 1987. He was the founding president of the AAPG's Division of Environmental Geosciences. Quote, he was interested in the environment and wanted the industry to be more environmentally aware, end quote, said his daughter, Gretchen Bach. That focus on the environment earned him an award from Midland College and Keep Midland Beautiful in 1996, known as the Bruno Hansen / Midland College Environmental Excellence Award, presented annually at the Permian Basin Environmental Regulatory Seminar. Bach recalled how her father, who passed away at age 71 in 2000, and fellow geologist Will Green, who also served as AAPG president, went back to school in their 60s to get degrees in environmental science. Gretchen, second of his three children, which includes sister Karen and their late brother Eric, said geology was a perfect fit for her father's love of the outdoors. Quote, he was taking engineering classes, and an engineering professor told him, since you like the outdoors, you ought to take a geology course. So he signed up for a geology camp, end quote, she recalled. It was a perfect fit. It also helped because his future father-in-law, Millward Miller, was a geologist. After graduating from the University of North Dakota, Hansen took a job with Magnolia Petroleum, now part of ExxonMobil, and was sent to Midland. Millward's daughter, Marilyn, a secretary to Magnolia's district geologist, had picked him as a favorite recruit from his picture and invited him to dinner. They were married 4 months later. He was soon called to active duty with the Army Reserve. He spent the next 2 winters at Camp Pendleton in Southern California and summers in Alaska, leading a survey party running latitude and longitude across the Alaskan Territory. During that first stint, he and 5 others spent 2 weeks lost in the fog on the Bering Sea. Also during that time, their first child was born. The Hansons then went to Wyoming, where Hansen earned a master's degree in geology, courtesy of the GI Bill, and welcomed second daughter Gretchen. He was then hired by Humble Oil and Refining and sent to New Orleans. During that time, he served a second stint in Alaska, volunteering for the team working up the surface geology. It was there that he was involved in a helicopter crash. In 1957, Humble asked him to open a district office in Anchorage, and third child Eric had arrived. Hansen was very involved in his children's scouting activities, frequently going on their camping trips, she said. He also frequently took his family hunting and camping, using the trips to show the children geological sites, she recalled. Quote, he's have these rock samples, and he would bring things home to show us, end quote, Gretchen recounted. Quote, he had a very scientific mind. He loved learning about formations. When he was working, they did a lot more science, end quote, she said. He was also very reasonable. He was also very personable. She described him as looking like John Wayne, quote, but he was a teddy bear, end quote. In 1960, he left Humble to join a small consulting firm, striking out on his own in 1961 as a consultant and operator. Ultimately, he owned 3 cable tool rigs, had some successful wells in Crane County and deep wells in Pecos County. He also did some international consulting, working with companies from the North Sea to Nigeria.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the local news from the Odessa American from June 15, 2024. Salvation Army holds ceremonial shelter opening by Laura Dennis. Big things are happening at the Odessa Salvation Army shelter, and Captain Robert Corriston held an open house Thursday to show the good work going on there. He said they are building a sense of community and happiness. The shelter opened full-time in December, but Thursday was a ceremonial opening so Odessans could see how the shelter is working to aid the homeless in Odessa. Corriston is now the captain of both the Odessa and Midland Salvation Armies, as the two previously separate Salvation Armies have combined in a move aimed to share services and staff and to better serve both communities. He said one program that started in Midland is having success in Odessa. The Salvation Army helps people who do not have a government ID. Thanks to a grant from Chevron, we started a program that helps people get a birth certificate or a Social Security card or military paperwork. Think about it. You can't do anything without an ID. He said shelter of the Salvation Army used to require an ID, but they have been able to change that and help numerous homeless get what they need to become self-sufficient. We never want to turn people away. Whenever it's too hot or too cold, we want to make sure the doors are open. He discussed community partnerships with places like Jesus House to make sure meals are served to the homeless and hungry. The Salvation Army serves dinner every day. They also serve breakfast and lunch Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, as well as dinner. Jesus House serves breakfast and lunch on the other days. Corriston said the Odessa shelter has about 55 beds and is currently full, but also has cots for emergencies. There are three family rooms and a women's area, as well as a dorm for men. We are the only homeless shelter in town. We are here to fill in the gaps, Corriston added. He said the shelter has been mostly closed for several years and during COVID and was mostly used just for emergencies. He said the doors open at 4:30 p.m. to begin serving dinner and then closes to those seeking overnight shelter at 9 p.m. with lights out at 10 p.m. daily in the shelter. He asks Odessans to not just donate funds to the Salvation Army, but to also volunteer, as there are many needs, including cooking, cleaning, and office help. He said clients were excited to have the open house Thursday, and they even pitched in to help apply fresh paint in some areas. He described their typical client at the shelter as someone who may be a veteran or was displaced after coming to Odessa for a job but has hit hard times. He said they have found they can help reconcile some homeless with family members by helping them get back home. Corriston was happy to report the Odessa Salvation Army received Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, funds this week that will help pay salaries for overnight monitors, bad weather monitors, and funding for new lockers for the shelter. Corriston said when the Odessa shelter closed several years ago, the Midland shelter felt it. He said the two offices working together is a great thing. We share resources and caseworkers and the ID program. It also opens more emergency beds. He said helping the homeless helps all Odessans. When the homeless take over a library or a park, that impacts families. Helping them get back on their feet and having a place to stay helps the whole community. He said the Salvation Army will be as successful as the community that supports it. Come and see what we are doing. We stretch every penny to meet the most human needs. Corriston said the most important need of the Odessa Salvation Army is prayer. We believe we are anointed here in Odessa and Midland, and we are inviting the community to walk along beside us. He encouraged potential donors and volunteers to visit SalvationArmyMyOdessa.org. ECISD star results mixed. The Texas Education Agency on Friday released star test results for grades 3 through 8, and the results were mixed for Ector County ISD. ECISD lags the state in most areas. Some results were much the same as last year, in math, for example, but others were down from last year, such as in fifth grade science. The details can be confusing, but ECISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins has said in the accountability system, approaches is the passing mark. In other words, approaches means passed, and anything below is failing. Third grade spring 2024 math results showed 64% passed and 36% failed. For spring 2023 math, 65% of third graders passed and 35% failed. At the state level, 68% of third graders passed math in 2024 compared to 72% in spring 23. In fourth grade, 64% of ECISD students passed math and 36% failed in 2024. In 2023, 66% of ECISD fourth graders passed math and 34% failed. At the state level, 67% of fourth graders passed math in spring 24 and 69% in spring 23. In 2024, 71% of ECISD fifth graders passed math and 29% failed. In 2023, 77% of fifth graders passed math and 23% failed. At the state level, it was 75% of fifth graders in 23 and 79% in 2024. In 2024, in ECISD, 65% of sixth graders passed math and 35% failed. In 2023, in ECISD, 71% of sixth graders passed math and 29% failed. At the state level, 69% of sixth graders passed math in spring 2024, compared to 79% in spring 2023. In 2024 in ECISD, 52% of 7th graders passed math and 48% failed. In 2023 in ECISD, 56% of 7th graders passed math and 44% failed. At the state level in 7th grade math, 53% passed in spring 2024, compared to 61% in spring 2023. In 8th grade math in ECISD for spring 2024, 61% passed and 39% failed. In 8th grade math in ECISD for spring 2023, 64% passed and 36% failed. At the state level in 8th grade, 70% passed math in spring 2024, compared to 74% in spring 2023. In 3rd grade reading, language arts for spring 2024, 68% passed and 32% did not. When students took the 3rd grade reading language arts test in 2023, 68% passed and 32% did not. At the state level, 72% of 3rd graders passed in 2024 and 75% in 2023. In 2024, 75% of 4th graders passed reading language arts and 25% failed. In 4th grade reading language arts in ECISD in 2023, 72% passed and 28% failed. At the state level, 79% passed reading language arts in 2024 and 76% passed in 2023. In 2024, 72% of 5th graders in ECISD passed reading language arts and 28% failed. In 2023, 74% of ECISD 5th grade students passed reading language arts and 26 failed. Paraprofessional of the Year, tops career off in style. Transition Learning Center Special Education Aide Salema Hawkes capped off her career right, winning the Paraprofessional of the Year award from Ector County ISD. Hawkes has been with ECISD for 21 years and retired this year. Micah Pettigrew, Special Education Autism Homebound 18-plus Supervisor, said Hawkes should have gotten the recognition years ago. She started in January 2002. She is an amazing paraprofessional, just constantly doing what's best for students, doing what's best for staff, doing what's best for the overall program, making sure that students got served in the way they should have been, Pettigrew said. Hawkes started subbing and then started working for Pettigrew. She asked me if I wanted to work full-time, and I said yes, and I've been here ever since, Hawkes said. Pettigrew said they have been in classrooms for 8 hours a day for all those years and never had an argument or disagreement. Because I respect her and she respects me. We respect each other's position. She's just amazing, Pettigrew said. Hawkes said she decided to retire because she feels the work in her body. I'm going to be 70 in October. I'm thinking I need to sit back, Hawkes said. The kids are what she likes best about her job, and they are what she will miss. I have a special needs brother. I'm his guardian, Hawkes said. She never thought she would win something like Paraprofessional of the Year. Hawkes and everyone at Transition Learning Center were told they were going to have some visitors and needed to be on their best behavior. I was in my room and I heard all kinds of noises like somebody with nails or something. I looked down and she was talking to Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray. They stopped right in front of my door and I said, "Whoa, what is this?" They all came in to surprise her. I never thought I was going to get something like that, Hawkes said. Pettigrew said she tried to get Hawkes to become a teacher. I tried and tried, Pettigrew said. Hawkes said she likes to help out and doesn't want to be the one in charge. Pettigrew said it's very important to have someone like Hawkes on staff because she knows she can count on her. The only time she has ever missed in all these years was when she absolutely had to. I know I can count on her, and that's a huge thing because with the type of students we have, we've got to make sure that staff members are here and in place and where they're supposed to be at all times, or things can happen, Pettigrew said. Hawkes keeps things organized so everyone knows where things are. In her retirement, Hawkes said she likes to do yard work, but she is also going to sub. I love yard work. I would do that more, but my son is living behind me and he's not letting me do yard work. I like to take out weeds. I like to have a clean yard. So, when her son goes to work, Hawkes said she'll go out and work in the yard. Hawkes and her husband, Ippolito, have 3 children and 4 grandchildren. IDEA Executive Director going to National Post. After 6 years of being Executive Director of the Permian Basin for IDEA Public Schools and one of the driving forces behind getting IDEA schools established in the area, Bethany Solis is moving up to become IDEA's Vice President of College Completion. Solis will be leading the national team, involved in everything that happens once seniors graduate and head to college. Our goal is to support them through completion of their degree, Solis said in a phone interview. Having finished out her tenure in the Permian Basin, where IDEA Yukon in Odessa and IDEA Travis in Midland were established, Solis has now moved to the Rio Grande Valley, where IDEA began. She's been with IDEA since 2005, except for a couple of years consulting for early college high schools. Upon college graduation, I really wanted to teach, so I moved to the Rio Grande Valley. I was part of Teach for America, which is an organization that recruits college grads to go teach in particularly underserved communities. I taught for 2 years in Mercedes ISD, which is right in the middle of the Rio Grande Valley. This was just a couple of years after IDEA had begun. It was just one school in Donna, Texas. I heard that there was a school that was working to prepare all kids for college success. That was an incredibly novel idea in education back then in the early 2000s. And it really inspired me as an elementary school teacher to think that I could contribute to a really big transformational goal, like my second graders one day going to college and completing college. I love the idea of being part of that, where everyone, K through 12, was rowing in the same direction, Solis said. At first, Solis had no desire to become an administrator. When, as a teacher, you start to realize there's so much you can do in 1 year, and yet there's so much you can't do in just 1 year. But when you have a really fantastic principal, then your 1 year contributes to a much larger year-after-year transformation. I realized if I was really serious about making sure that every child that walked through our school doors had an excellent education that would put them on the path to college, no matter their background, then I knew that you have to have a really good principal to make that happen year after year, Solis said. She became the founding elementary principal of IDEA Mission, and after 2 years consulting and coaching with Educate Texas, returned to IDEA in 2012 to design and launch their Principals in Residence program. As Vice President of Leader Development, Solis led the training and development of over 100 aspiring and new principals, as well as other organization-wide leader development programs, the IDEA website said. What drew her to the basin initially was seeing community leaders who saw the need for dramatic change in the education options in the community and who were willing to roll up their sleeves and give of their time, talent, and resources to make that happen, Solis said. In 5 or 6 years, the number of IDEA alumni is going to grow exponentially. Our schools scale. So at UConn, we started with just K through 2, and then 6. every year we're adding more grade levels. Now, lots of those schools are going to be hitting their senior year of expansion, and so every year we're going to have hundreds, and some years thousands, more graduate and head to college. It's really kind of a next-level era for us in terms of alumni support, Solis said. Right now, IDEA generally sees about 50% of our alumni complete college in 4 to 6 years. That's pretty remarkable because it's about 5 times the average for Hispanic students, which the vast majority of our students are. However, if you grow up in the richest communities in America, you're completing college at rates that are more like 60 and 70%. Our goal is by 2030 to increase our college completion rate from 50% to 70%. That's going to take doing things differently to get a really different outcome, Solis added. How that gets done is her job to figure out, she said. The Permian Basin campuses in Odessa and Midland are going in the right direction. It's been a really hard 4 years. Even though I've been in the position for 6 years, we've had schools in operation for 4 years. It's been a really challenging landscape between COVID and the challenges during COVID, the attendance challenges post-COVID, school finance. Schools are severely underfunded in the state of Texas, and we're not alone in that. That's all public schools throughout the community having to make budget cuts and get really creative with the limited resources we have. So it has been a really difficult 4 years, but I'm really excited about where we're headed. I think IDEA UConn, especially at the middle school level, has performed really well. IDEA Travis made some huge gains their first year. We're waiting for results for this year, so I don't know exactly how things are looking, but we have just 3 years to go until we graduate our first senior class at IDEA Travis, and then in 4 years, our first senior class at IDEA UConn, Solis said. She added that IDEA does its best work in those final years of high school, when students start getting accepted and matriculating into college. Solis said they are proud of their college, career, and military readiness, or CCMR, numbers. We were recently notified that of larger districts with 60% or more economically disadvantaged students, we have the highest CCMR results in the state of Texas. That just speaks to what IDEA is capable of and what our schools in the Permian Basin are year by year pushing towards, she said. Sometimes people ask her why there is so much emphasis on a 4-year degree at IDEA. I think it's important to note that not only does the attainment of a college degree dramatically increase your average lifetime earning potential by about $1.5 million, but there's just really remarkable individual and social benefits that accompany college degrees. Incarceration rates drop tremendously. Your likelihood of being in poverty or unemployed decreases, Solis said. It also doubles or even triples the likelihood that you'll vote, volunteer, and be engaged civically. These are things that we believe every individual, every family, every community could have equal access to. And unfortunately, right now, it is much easier to obtain those benefits if you come from a wealthy family. And it is statistically very difficult to achieve a college degree if you come from one of the poorest families or communities, Solis said. We exist because we firmly believe that access to college and all the benefits that come with it should be very equal, no matter what side of the tracks you grow up on and no matter what your zip code is, no matter how much your family makes. I think it's really important to emphasize that that is why IDEA exists, so that every child, every family, has equal opportunity to pursue that path, she added. Solis has a double major in American Studies and Spanish from Brigham Young University and a master's in Education Administration from Sam Houston State University. She and her husband Sergio have 3 children. He supervises and teaches high school and college religious education. Council member seeks control of city restrooms. Thompson says an overreach and questions who would police it, by Kim Smith. Odessa City Councilmember Chris Haney wants to change city rules so that berth assignments will dictate who can use what bathroom, not only in city buildings, but in Odessa schools, hospitals, and colleges. His proposal prompted a lot of discussion during Tuesday afternoon's council work session, and while some question whether they might be overreaching a bit, most of the council seemed to agree with the spirit of Haney's proposal. Haney brought his idea to the council because he said President Joe Biden bypassed Congress and wrote a law that will allow men to play women's sports, and he believes that will lead to men using women's locker rooms. The changes the U.S. Department of Education made to Title IX seek to protect against discrimination based on sex stereotypes, sexual orientation, gender identity, and sex characteristics, and have prompted more than two dozen GOP-led states to file lawsuits. In addition, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Department of Justice have issued new rules intended to protect transgender Americans from workplace discrimination. Specifically, employers must recognize transgender workers' pronouns and allow them to use restrooms that aligns with the gender they identify with. I now have granddaughters that are playing sports that are now threatened to have boys dressing with them. I am here to protect them. I was elected to do what my constituents say to do, but most of all, I do what my God says, Haney said. Haney said bills are started at the ground level, and he reminded his fellow council members the city passed an ordinance banning mandates like those enacted during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you're not willing to step up to protect our children, then go tell your daughters, your sons, your grandsons, and your granddaughter that you're not worth my time, Haney said. There is no discrimination in this ordinance. There is a birth certificate that says boy or girl. The city's current ordinance prohibits entering restrooms of opposite sex, prompting Councilmember Steve Thompson to suggest Haney's idea is redundant. Thompson also questioned who would police it. Are you going to walk around with a birth certificate in your hand all of the time? Thompson asked. He also noted that unisex restrooms in city-owned buildings must have floor-to-ceiling walls and doors that lock from the inside. Solves the problem. Can't just walk in, Thompson said. Haney insisted that if he sees a man in a bathroom with his daughter, he is going to remove that man. Biden is going to push this to our schools. He's going to push this to everyone. So we're going to have elementary schools who, if that male teacher in there wants to go in the bathrooms with the girls, can go into a bathroom with the girls. There's nothing to prevent this. We can prevent all of this, Haney said. I'm trying to get this thing stopped before it ever begins. Haney said that because the council allocates money to schools, builds roads, and issues certificates of occupancy, we should be able to control every bit of this. Mayor Javier Hoban said that as the grandfather of four girls, he is concerned, but he wants to make sure any ordinance changes will stand up to any legal challenges. City Attorney Dan Jones told the council he doesn't believe the city will be able to dictate what happens within the Ector County Independent School District, but if we could get all five entities on board, this would be awesome. Thompson said the council has other issues to address, and this is just a waste of time, in my opinion. Councilmember Mark Mata said he liked the premise of Haney's suggestion, but also worried they may be overreaching. If they could have, they would have banned game rooms outside the city limits, he noted. Councilman Greg Connell was also in favor of Haney's idea and particularly liked the idea of using birth sex in the ordinance. He said the phrase opposite sex is open to interpretation. City Manager John Beckmeyer suggested using the phrase biological sex. Councilmember Denise Swanner also expressed support. Haney suggested sending any proposed ordinance changes to the Texas Attorney General's office for an opinion. City Manager John Beckmeyer said that is possible, but questioned how long it would take to get an answer back. Jeff Russell, who sits on the Odessa Development Corporation Board, thanked Haney for bringing the matter to the council, saying it will be a worthwhile fight. There's been quite a bit of discussion here about how the city can't, through ordinance, impose regulations on other entities. We do this all the time. Our ordinance books are replete with it, Russell said. We have fire codes. We have safety codes. We have occupancy codes. We have all kinds of codes that are administered by the city that apply to everything, including our other governmental entities. He suggested the council seek qualified legal counsel that will help with an ordinance that will work. I appreciate you guys not shrinking from the challenge of having to figure out this brave new world, Russell said.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.